Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the Middle East amid fears of a widening conflict.
Pressure keeps mounting on Israel to protect Palestinian civilian lives, and Blinken said he'll bring up the topic again during the discussions he'll hold this week in Israel.
Plus, Ukraine faced another barrage of Russian missiles.
I've spent half of the night basically in the shelter myself with my family. It was another massive attack with more than 50 missiles that were targeted different regions of Ukraine.
And later, a look at Taiwan as it prepares for an election with possible worldwide consequences. And we'll find out what role narcotics may have played in the October 7th attacks on Israel. Today is Monday, January 8th, and this is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in the Middle East working to keep the war between Israel and Hamas from widening. He sure has his work cut out for him. Israel says Hezbollah struck a sensitive air traffic control base in the north and warns of further confrontations. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The Israeli military said on Sunday Hezbollah had struck an air traffic control base in northern Israel and warns of another war with the Iran-backed militant group. The military added defenses were not affected because backup systems were in place and no soldiers were hurt and all damage will be repaired. The increase in fighting across the border with Lebanon comes as Israel battles Hamas militants in Gaza and has given new urgency to U.S. diplomatic efforts as Secretary of State Antony Blinken prepares to visit Israel on his latest Mideast tour. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Meanwhile, an Israeli airstrike killed an elite Hezbollah commander in southern Lebanon on Monday. The strike on an SUV killed a high-ranking officer in a secretive Hezbollah force that operates along the border. This, according to a Lebanese security official speaking on the condition of anonymity. Hezbollah identified the slain fighter as Wissam al-Tawil without providing any details. He is the most senior militant in the armed group to have been killed since Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed a crowd in the country's north.
We will do everything to restore security in the north and allow your families, because many of you are local, to return home safely and know that we cannot be messed with. We will do whatever it takes. Of course, we prefer that this be done without a wide campaign, but that will not stop us. We give Hezbollah an example of what is happening to his friends in the south. This is what will happen here in the north. We will do everything to restore security. Thank you.
Fears grow that Israel, the U.S., and Iran's allies are inching closer to all-out war with each strike. In the last week alone, Israel has killed a senior Hamas militant leader in an airstrike in Beirut, Hezbollah has struck a sensitive Israeli base with rockets, and the United States has killed a militia commander in Baghdad, and Iran-backed rebels in Yemen have traded fire with the U.S. Navy. Each strike and counterstrike increases the risk of the already catastrophic war in Gaza spilling across the region. And in the decades-old standoff pitting the U.S. and Israel against Iran and allied militant groups, there are fears that any one party could trigger a wider war, if only to avoid appearing weak. And now to Secretary of State Antony Blinken. He met with several Arab leaders in the Middle East amid growing regional tensions related to the Israel-Hamas war. Separately, Israel made it clear on Sunday that no Palestinians will be forced to resettle outside Gaza, but that the war will continue. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias has the story.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken's agenda was packed with high-level meetings in the Arab world Sunday as part of his efforts to ease regional tensions and prevent the widening of the Israel-Hamas war. The latest conflict began when Hamas launched a terrorist incursion into Israeli territory on October 7, killing around 1,200 people and taking about 240 hostages. After meeting with his Jordanian counterpart, Ayman Safadi, Blinken toured a warehouse of the World Food Program.
It is imperative that we maximize assistance to people in need. Not only do we get it to Gaza and into Gaza, but once it's in Gaza, that it can be effectively distributed to people who need it everywhere in Gaza. We'll be working on that in phase ahead as well.
The top U.S. diplomat also visited Qatar and held talks with Prime Minister Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Thani. During their joint news conference, Blinken rejected recent statements by some Israeli cabinet members calling for the forced resettlement of Palestinians outside of Gaza.
These statements are irresponsible, they're inflammatory, and they only make it harder to secure a future for Palestinian-led Gaza, with Hamas no longer in control and with terrorist groups no longer able to threaten Israel's security.
The expulsion of Palestinians from the Gaza Strip is not the Jewish state's official position, clarified Israeli President Isaac Herzog during an appearance on NBC's Meet the Press.
In a cabinet of 30 ministers, where it's not the security cabinet, a minister can say whatever he wants. I may not like it, but this is Israeli politics. But really, I'm saying outright, officially and unequivocally, this is not the Israeli position.
The current war won't end, however, until all its objectives are met, reiterated Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during a cabinet meeting.
The elimination of Hamas, the return of all our hostages, and the promise that Gaza won't pose a threat to Israel anymore.
Pressure keeps mounting on Israel to protect Palestinian civilian lives, and Blinken said he'll bring up the topic again during the discussions he'll hold this week in Israel. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
We'll have an update on the war in Ukraine in just a moment, but before we do, it's a story from Israel about the intersection of narcotics abuse and the October 7th massacre. Hundreds of Hamas militants were killed or captured during the October 7th rampage, in which they killed some 1,200 people in Israel and kidnapped 240, thus sparking the war in Gaza. Israeli officials say many of them were found carrying pills, an amphetamine called Captagon. It's a stimulant that can lower inhibitions and boost stamina. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Numerous witnesses said that many of the Hamas militants who crossed the border from Gaza into Israel on October 7th appeared euphoric. They managed to invade more than 20 small communities, slaying about 1,200 Israelis and in some cases mutilating and raping them and taking 240 others hostage. Israeli officials confirmed that many of the gunmen who were captured or killed were carrying pills containing Captagon, an amphetamine drug nicknamed poor man's cocaine and ISIS chemical courage.
For years, Captagon has been prevalent among Islamic State fighters, especially in Iraq and Syria, basically because it gives them almost superhuman powers, including the ability to stay awake, calm, focus for days. I would also add that Captagon also, to some extent, eliminates fear and hunger. And its low cost, which is estimated between $1 and $5, can also explain its large consumption among youth in the Middle East.
Many Israeli drug experts believe that Captagon was widely used during the Hamas invasion in October. And while officials say pills were found on the attackers, the Israeli army spokesman has not confirmed whether Hamas militants captured alive had admitted using Captagon or if any had been found in the bloodstream of those killed.
We know that Captagon was found. We know that it was found in large quantities. And we can assume from that it was used extensively by Hamas terrorists to reduce moral judgment, to enhance combat activity, to enhance sexual excitation, to reduce any kind of inhibition towards conducting atrocities.
But some Israeli analysts caution that Captagon cannot be blamed for the Hamas atrocities of October 7th. They say responsibility for the brutality comes from many years of indoctrination and the dehumanizing of Jews.
Amphetamines do not turn people into savages. Okay, the same way that the youngsters that take amphetamines and dance all night and party don't become savage, the terrorists don't become savages because of amphetamine.
Captagon use by militant groups is not only problematic in the context of the Hamas attack against Israel, it is an extremely lucrative commodity which is mainly manufactured in Syria and exported to Middle Eastern Arab countries, many of which have declared the drug's use a national public health emergency. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
And now to Ukraine, where President Volodymyr Zelensky says his country can defeat Russian aggression with continued and expanding Western support. This as Russia's invasion of its neighbor appears set to enter a third year. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Rescue workers in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro fight fires following a Russian drone strike Saturday. Ukraine's Air Force issued a statement on its Telegram channel saying overnight it destroyed 21 of Russia's 28 attack drones, without mentioning three cruise missiles also launched in the assault. VOA cannot independently verify the report, but Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says only with increased cooperation can Russian aggression be defeated.
To create an arsenal for the defense of freedom, Europe needs joint weapons production. Much larger scale production than now. We see that Russia's aggressive ambitions can be stopped only where there is sufficient strength to stop them. And we will provide such strength only together.
Zelensky echoing Ukraine's defense industry head from late last year. Ukraine's Minister of Strategic Industries, Oleksandr Kamyshyn, speaking with the Associated Press.
Now we're refocusing on making Ukraine the arsenal of the free world. We are focusing on producing all types of weapons and ammunition, and we show that we can test it on the battlefield and make it better during the war. That's something we can contribute to the free world.
In the closing days of 2023 and so far this year, Russia deployed nearly 300 missiles and more than 200 drones in attacks on Ukraine. And while Russia has relied on Iran for many of its drones, Ukrainian investigators and the White House say Russia recently began using North Korean-supplied ballistic missiles in attacks across Ukraine, a move described as a major escalation. Russia and North Korea deny the partnership. That doesn't mean that Russia abandoned its own missile systems, however, as Zelensky said Moscow fired its conventional S-300 missiles into Ukraine's Donetsk region, killing at least 11, nearly half of them children. Rescue efforts are ongoing. With Russia's invasion of Ukraine nearly entering a third year, Kyiv continues its push for material support while urging its Western partners to consider it a hub of allied weapon production. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You're listening to Flashpoint Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We'll see how some Taiwanese are preparing for the possible consequences of the upcoming election in a moment. But first, VOA's Anna Chernikova is in Kyiv. She spoke with my colleague Lori London about the recent attacks.
Quite a tough beginning of this 2024 new year for Ukrainians. And now is the second week that we are in the new year that started with a massive attack of the Russian forces. On Monday, January 8th, the air raid alarm was on from around 6 o'clock in the morning local time. And I've spent half of the night basically in the shelter myself with my family. It was another massive attack with more than 50 missiles that were targeted different regions of Ukraine. What we know at this moment that there were some hits and also the hits of the debris of the missiles. The Ukrainian armed forces confirmed that at least 18 missiles were destroyed. Those missiles are the KH type of missiles, as well as 8 drones were destroyed by the Ukrainian air defense. In total, 59 missiles were launched by the Russian forces and some of them reached their destinations. Ukrainian Air Force and Ukrainian military confirmed that this time the main target was critical civil infrastructure, industrial and military facilities in different regions of Ukraine. The main regions that were under the attack, as I mentioned already, in the west, Khmelnytsky region, as well as in the east, Kharkiv, Dnipropetrovsk, and the Zaporizhia regions.
And it sounds like, despite their targeting defense industry, the attack struck a large portion of urban areas, including housing and civilian areas.
Yeah, most of the debris fall is damaging the infrastructure, the civilian infrastructure and residential areas. Also, sometimes missiles are not that precise and also can strike directly into the residential areas, into the buildings, and particularly this latest attack in Kyiv on the 2nd of January, also over the night on Monday in the western part of the country and in the eastern part of the country, also the residential areas were damaged and affected a lot because of the debris fall particularly.
Western officials had been warning that Russia may have been stockpiling for this onslaught in the winter, and it looks like that was a correct warning. How are things going on the front line, and what are the expectations? How are people feeling?
Well, situation is extremely intense. It remains intense. It was not a calm down at all. The only slight calm down in the fighting was for some time over the new year, but during this time, it was more intensified artillery fighting on the ground. So basically, we can say that it remains intense. And two hottest spots at the front line remain in the east around Avdiivka and the area, and also in the south in Kherson region. But Ukrainian officials, and not only military officials, but also experts, as well as Institute for the Study of War, actually in their latest report, all of them confirm that Russian forces reportedly might be preparing for additional assault, which will be happening in the Kharkiv region. And this is something that might be another escalation. So Ukrainian society and Ukrainian military is getting ready to that. And there are a lot of talks about this already. But Ukrainian military officials said that Ukrainian forces are preparing and have no plans to leave their defense positions in that area.
That's VOA's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv speaking with Lori London, host of Flashpoint Ukraine. And now to Taiwan, where a possible Chinese attempt to take over has been a threat to the island for decades. It's a topic among the candidates in Taiwan's upcoming presidential election, but some residents on the island say the threat of a Chinese attack is more real now than ever before, and they're taking action. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has the details.
At this airsoft gun club, while these students are learning to handle a gun that shoots plastic pellets, Tony Liu has shot with real bullets and experienced war.
I bought a plane ticket and went to Ukraine. I didn't tell anyone.
These relics, the reminders of the 3 months Liu spent fighting in Ukraine.
Since the Russia-Ukraine war, there have been more and more of these civil defense classes.
Some people in Taiwan worry if Russia can attack Ukraine, then China could attack Taiwan. Some people take action by learning how to shoot. Others take an interest in using ham radios to communicate. In this classroom at Kuma Academy, students learn how to recognize disinformation, how to survive if basic infrastructure is disrupted, and how to save lives with first aid skills. Most of the students have been women.
It's almost like a team of moms. Their motivation to come to class is they want to know in extraordinary situations, including war, what can they do, how can they protect their family.
The history between Taiwan and China stems from the Chinese Civil War that ended more than 70 years ago. The communists won, and the ruling nationalist government retreated to Taiwan. Beijing considers Taiwan a part of China, even though Taiwan now has its own democratic government. China attacking the island has always been a possibility, but after so many years, apathy has set in for some people, according to Kuma Academy co-founder Marco Ho.
Often there's a thinking, something that did not happen yesterday also did not happen today. then tomorrow, it also won't happen. This thinking is very dangerous.
Many here say the China threat has changed ever since Chinese leader Xi Jinping came to power.
He wants to be the one to set the international standards.
Another reason to take note of the China threat?
I think the biggest reason is technology. There's confusion in all the information. Because information is very confusing, you don't know if it's going to be a military assault or information warfare.
Liu doubts that the people of Taiwan can protect the island.
I'm not very optimistic. People need to strengthen their ability to defend Taiwan. Life has been too peaceful.
Observers say whether China attacks does not depend on who is elected Taiwan's next president. Instead of trying to calculate the risk of war, Ho says, Taiwan's residents need to face the reality that war is possible and should prepare for it. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Taipei, Taiwan.
And finally today, the climate crisis. The impact of climate change is increasingly evident along El Salvador's coastlines, where the salt water is slowly claiming what was once farmland. Veronica Villafañe narrates this report from Claudia Zaldana.
The ground appears to be covered in snow, but this is salt. On the Salvadoran peninsula of San Juan del Gozo, near the coast, salt water has steadily encroached upon this land because of climate change, according to locals.
The problem with this land is salt. A lot of salt has filtered through. The salt is already this deep.
Juan Vides is a farmer who has lived in the area for decades. He says that for more than 8 years, he has not been able to grow anything on his plot of land due to salt intrusion.
That's why the last time I planted, the corn was literally cooked. It didn't sprout due to the intensity of the salt. It cooked it.
Here, salt water from the sea has both entered the subsoil of coastal areas and is mixing with freshwater aquifers. Some environmental experts, such as Ricardo Navarro, say the situation has worsened because of the rise in sea levels.
As sea levels have risen, salt water intrusion has moved further inland. Where people used to be able to dig a well and get fresh water, they may now find brackish water.
Some residents report that their well water is now saltier.
Of all the wells the families had, there are only 8 that can still be used for human consumption. The water in the other wells is very salty.
There are no desalination plants or other ways to improve water quality in the area. Residents claim they have no government or private support. Some farmers are looking for solutions. The area is also suffering under a prolonged drought, so Raul Villalta is now planting alternative crops such as cashew and sesame.
Here we have a corn crop, but at the same time we have an agroforestry crop. Amid the corn, we planted cashews. The corn was lost, but the cashew crop remains. And thank God, cashews are quite resistant to drought.
While some farmers switch crops, others try to make a living from fishing in the nearby mangroves or raising livestock like Vides.
Nowadays, with the small amount of cattle that I have there, that's my job. That's how I survive.
And Navarro says there are also ways to fight back against the rising sea levels.
We could bring in fertile soil to build the orchards on elevated ground so that they would not be exposed to salt water.
By creating family orchards on elevated ground, farmers could continue to produce food for their families and communities, even in the face of rising sea levels and saltwater intrusion. For Claudia Saldaña in Jiquilisco, El Salvador, Veronica Villafañe, VOA News.
And that's going to do it for today. There is more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and across our social media platforms. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thanks for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Steve Karish.
We'll be right back.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.